Ryan, Homefield Apparel is here to support Gopher Gridiron Radio. As I was walking around the tailgates in Clemson, Ryan, I was wearing one of my Homefield Apparel t-shirts, a Gopher Homefield Apparel t-shirt, and I was able to be spotted as the one not wearing Clemson gear. And they said, hey, where did you get that sweet shirt? I said, hey, you can get this sweet shirt and vintage licensed apparel from many universities, including your own in Clemson. All you have to do is go to homefieldapparel.com.
I cannot stress to you, from walking around the different tailgating lots this year, the amount of Homefield Apparel I saw out there, whether it's the Spin Your Head t-shirt that recently came out, one that the Gopher players were even wearing. I saw that at the airport. There was a guy wearing it. Whether it's the sweatshirt from the Minnesota football box, they've got for these chillier games coming up, you got the bomber jacket, you got the coach's jacket. The amount of Homefield Apparel that you guys are finding that, yeah, it's cool, unique, and it fits well and it feels good. There's a reason that we go with these guys, people. It's great quality stuff, very unique stuff that you're going to be excited to wear. So what we want you to do, go to homefieldapparel.com. Click on Minnesota, click on your favorite NCAA 25 team, whether that's Missouri Western. I can guarantee there's going to be some unique things for you to check out. And when you do get to check out, use promo code GG, the numbers 24, and you get 15% off your first order. That is promo code GG24 at checkout.
And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to your Gopher football team on a four-game Big Ten winning streak as they finally conquer Mount Bielema in Champaign, of all places, as your Golden Gophers with a score-nami of 25-17. That is the first time in the history of Gopher football that has been the score. That is Carl Anderson, our favorite SID, with that statistic. Luke, I know you don't even want to talk about this game. You want to talk about a different one with an orange team that you attended this weekend.
I actually don't want to talk about that game because it wasn't a very good game. The irony of that whole thing was I went to some Clemson Clemson tailgate before the game, and I said, I don't want to play Jeff Brohm under any circumstance ever, because I, especially in night games, especially against a team that, you know, is very, very good at winning at home. And yeah, Louisville did it. They were by far the better team. They made Clemson look very pedestrian.
Well, you've always been a big Jeff Brohm guy, but I think the most important thing is what you tweeted out. Actually, look at you using social media, by the way. You somehow found a way, much to, I will say this, Luke, I didn't doubt you from the start, but I had a couple of listeners send me a message, and it's funny, it didn't get to you. They didn't want to tell you. They wanted to tell me that they think, or at least they thought, you were going to have a hard time sneaking in a duck beer, and you might even be thrown out at the gate. So I haven't heard the story. What is the story of how did you sneak in something into Clemson?
Okay, so I mentioned on here that my goal was to try and get a duck beer into the stadium so that we could get the photo, right? Bring the first duck beer to Memorial Stadium at Clemson. Ultimately, I touted this plan to my college buddies. They were in on it. I touted it to the tailgate that I was going to try, and they said, yeah, you can sneak stuff in, but usually it's got to be in your pocket. Obviously, a can is not going to fit in my pocket particularly well. I don't know about you, Ryan, but I don't have big pockets.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if you're asking me, absolutely. I mean, I can fit like a normal. I can't fit a can without it looking incredibly, incredibly odd.
Okay, so it's supposed to be a pretty nice night. I brought like a long sleeve with me. So I wrapped the can into the long sleeve, and then I walked through the metal detector. It went off, and then they like and then I just kept walking, and they're like, no, you gotta go in this line to get wanded. And I was like, okay. And then my college buddy walked through, and he...
Are you sweating at this point when you get hit?
No, because at this point, like, I am none the wiser. I don't know that... I know they don't allow alcohol into the... they don't sell alcohol, but I didn't know that they'd do anything to me. So, no, I'm just like, oh, if they take it, they take it. Whatever. Okay. I get pushed into this other line of all the people, you know, that had, like... metal rods in their hips or whatever. I was by far the youngest person in this line. I just want to acknowledge this first and foremost.
You in your late 50s.
Yep. And my college buddy looks over at me, and he sees that I'm in this line. He just walked over to me and grabbed the beer and put it in his pocket and walked away. Like, God, I know, and they're like, there's security lines. There's security people everywhere. Like, how nobody saw that, I have no idea. So then, you know, then we got in, and I was sitting next to my brother-in-law. I sat down. The guy to the left of me has a Clemson shirt on, and I'm like, I pull out the beer, and I'm like taking a photo, and then he says something to me, and I was like, boy, that's an interesting accent. Dude's from the Netherlands. He's visiting for like... He's visiting the greater Atlanta area. So I basically explained football to him the entire game, which was fun. He didn't know a ton. He and his buddy didn't know a ton of American football. But they had fun. And then we had this very, very excitable, like late 20s group of Louisville fans in front of us. And they were a blast. Like, they were so into it. They were giving us high fives because we were, you know, our entire group had no interest in a rooting interest, I should say. And so we were giving them high fives. And I will tell you, Ryan, the Clemson fan base is about as weak a fan base as I've ever seen in a road college football game. They left.
Boy, you're throwing some shade out here at Clemson.
I don't mean to speak ill of them. They were really nice people and stuff. Ryan, there was a mad exodus in the middle of the third quarter. Like, by the time the fourth quarter hit, the place wasn't even a quarter full. I couldn't believe it. Like,
and that was a 6-1 Clemson team at the time.
Yeah. They just like completely bailed. But yeah, that's the story of the Duck Duck beer. We got it in, we got the photos. My whole group was just jazzed that we got it in. And then we got the photo, and I don't know, I think it's got something like 13,000 views at this point on X. So, yeah.
Well, I love that for you. You are the known hooligan of this podcast compared to me, the straight-laced.
You're pretty straight-laced guy. Yeah, I have always been known to be
many
the
people
rule
say
breaker.
That about me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was a great experience. Here's the thing, though, Ryan. What I will say, and then we will absolutely talk about the Gopher football game, because we watched that in an Airbnb, and that was a blast.
Or some of us were actually live from Champaign.
Yeah. We watched in an Airbnb in Clemson. What I want to note is that Clemson is like, it's basically like Brainerd, where there's a bunch of lakes and a bunch of cabins, and then there happens to be a Division I football, or there happens to be a Division I college there. Or university, and they have an 80,000 person stadium, like in the middle of Brainerd. It was bonkers. It's actually probably even smaller than Brainerd, if we're honest.
Do you have anything good to say about? You're gonna.
It's beautiful. It was beautiful. No, I don't.
Fan that ends up finding this for whatever reason.
I have no ill will towards them. Like it was. It's a beautiful area. I thought the fans were super nice. The tailgating experience was pretty great. The Louisville tailgate we found after the game was those guys were super jazzed and super fun. No, like it was great. We had a lot of fun, but I was not the one trumpeting like the weakness of the fans. They just acted a little entitled. And you know, maybe rightfully so. They've been in quite a number of college football playoffs, won a couple national championships. They have very, very high lofty expectations, and I guess they wanted to get out early. That's all I got to say.
Well, I can assure you no one wanted to get out early from yet another. I swear to God, Luke, every Gopher football game this season,
yeah,
it's, I mean, you
down
can,
to the wire.
I would strongly encourage you to turn in from the start, or tune in from the start, I should say. But yet another fourth quarter where your Golden Gophers have to make a comeback, and we'll get to all the different sequences of why they had to make a comeback. But a 25-17 victory. They get bowl eligible here in early November. I think you and I, well, what do we say in the pre-production or the preview show, I should say?
You picked Minnesota to win. I picked Illinois to win. So I'm the, you know, I went the Debbie Downer route, even though you're getting completely bashed on your board.
I predicted a cover too, didn't I?
Let's see. You picked Minnesota to cover. Yes, you did.
But I'm too negative, Luke.
You're too negative. You are too negative. Yeah, 20.
Many people are saying that today, which is kind of boggling my mind, but I'm also on about 4 hours of sleep.
All right. So the Gophers move to 6-3, 4-2 in conference. Illinois moves to 6-3, 3-3 in conference. As you said, Ryan, Minnesota wins 25-17. I think it's worth noting that This ends the drought against Brett Bielema. They finally get a victory against him between his two stops at both Wisconsin and Illinois. He's really had Minnesota's number, and they finally get a win. And it's also worth noting this was another win on the road, Ryan. It's not easy to win road games, and they found a way to win in another Memorial Stadium. This one just happens to be in Champaign, Illinois.
Yeah, it was a game in which Minnesota felt like they should have been winning by more, and I think a lot of Gopher fans would agree with me on that. And then you look up, and it's 16-10 in the early part of the fourth quarter, and you're thinking to yourself, boy, it feels like it should be a 20-10 or something like that. You have played well enough, and you've kept Illinois' offense really sporadic. Your offense, on the flip side for the Gophers, has moved the ball, but they haven't been efficient once they got past the 30-yard line. And then it gets a little pear-shaped in the fourth quarter, but I think the thing, and I wrote about it after the game, is the moment Illinois took the lead, 17-16, I think there was about 9 minutes left on the clock. The next two drives for Minnesota continue to show what I call the word response, that why is Minnesota on a 4-game Big Ten winning streak? Because they continue to find themselves in the fourth quarter where the offense hadn't been playing great. Specifically, Max Brosmer hadn't been playing his best football. Yet, he comes out on that next drive, and his second throw is an absolute drop in the bucket to Daniel Jackson for 37 yards. He makes another couple of throws after a delay of game, one that makes it to Daniel Jackson for second and manageable. I also would call that Elijah Spencer catch that was ended up being targeting on the Illini. I call that in the business a hospital ball, as he absolutely gets crushed across the middle, but the Charlotte transfer hangs on. And then Greg Harbaugh gets in his bag of tricks and goes with the fake tush push, and Jamison Gears puts it in the end zone. And then that next drive from the Gopher defense, after Luke Altmyer wakes up after an atrocious third quarter, which we'll talk about, it's the Kerry Brown drive, where as much of the praise that Coy Parrish deserves, I would tell you, don't sleep on Kerry Brown, because he has continued to play well as a redshirt freshman. He run blitzes on third down, is able to get the tackle for loss. He is the guy in the area on the fourth down throw that's not connected, turnover on downs. Those two drives specifically tell me everything I need to know about this Gopher team and how well that they continue to play here in the early part of November, Luke.
Yeah, so let's talk about when the Gophers were on offense. I think it's worth acknowledging that this felt like, Ryan, one of the few instances where the opponent really tried to take away the run. I said that incorrectly. I'm also light on sleep. Where they really tried to take away the pass, they dropped into coverage a fair amount and dared the Gophers to run. And frankly, Ryan, the Gophers are able to find probably one of their better running performances in recent memory this season. Darius Taylor was 22 carries for 134 yards. Marcus Major was 5 carries for 20 yards, both of them over 4 yards per carry. Darius Taylor at 6 yards per carry and Marcus Major at at four. It's also worth noting that Mark Crawford also had a carry for 10 yards. We'll probably get to that a little bit later.
I think that might be on the docket for tonight.
but yeah, in general, they were able to run the ball pretty well, and they made some adjustments to the offensive line. I think it's worth noting that. You can relay that to the listeners. But man, I thought that they got some of their better push that I've seen all season.
Yeah, let's start up front, and then we can work our way back to Brosmer. Would be the Minnesota Moving Company is one that I have challenged, I would say. I've been negative on them, maybe compared to some other people. I would argue they had one of their best performances of the season, especially in the run game. I would argue it might have been their best and most complete performance of the season. Now, you know what the changes that ended up happening in this game. Tyler Cooper, Minnesota's starting left guard, missed the game as he is in the concussion protocol, from what I understand. Something that I don't know that Brett Bielema in Illinois fully comprehend what a brain injury is, and some of the different things that I'll say that Pat Bryan came back from. I saw them take a couple of hits, watch them come to the sideline, not really get any medical attention, which I thought was interesting, and they get right back in the game. But with Tyler Cooper not being able to go, that meant Minnesota shuffled some things on the offensive line, including Philip Daniels, the redshirt freshman from Ohio, getting his first career start ever at right tackle. Quinn Carroll slides into guard, and then you flip-flopped Ashton Beers to left guard. And here's what I will say, Luke. I thought Philip Daniels, if we want to start there, for his first career start against what is a very physical Illinois team, and Gabe Akis, because I know I got that wrong on the preview show, and I had some people tell me their thoughts and feelings on that. He gave Daniels a little bit of trouble early, but I think if you look at the overall body of work for number 60 in his first career start, I don't know how you don't leave encouraged. Now, one of the comparisons that PJ made after the game was, he compared that first career start for Philip Daniels to what it looked like in his eyes. Now, he's not comparing the two players, but what it looked like in his eyes for Ariante Ursary at Nebraska in 2020. Now, it would be a 95th percentile outcome if Philip Daniels goes on to have the collegiate and hopefully NFL career that Ariante Ursary is about to have. But I thought Philip Daniels, you see the athleticism and you see the physicality, because that's the number one thing that when I asked around about Philip Daniels here, and I wrote about him here in the offseason, was I had somebody point out to me last week that their biggest worry with Philip Daniels playing wasn't his play. They thought he was going to get a 15-yard penalty for finishing after the whistle or something like that. And if that's going to be the biggest complaint going into a first career start is, oh no, he's going to play so hard it might go past the whistle, sign me up every day and twice on Saturdays for someone like that, Luke.
Yeah, I mentioned in the group chat that you know, run blocking, he looked particularly good. There were a couple moments that he maybe struggled in pass blocking, but it was an interesting adjustment that they made. And they did it out of necessity. We had talked about maybe even moving Greg Johnson to guard and moving Ashton Beers over to center or whatever. But the fact that Tyler Cooper was out didn't allow that to happen. But out of necessity, they're able to bring in Philip Daniels, and maybe you got something here. By far, one of the best efforts that we've seen out of this offensive line, especially run blocking. And you hope that maybe can continue, and we can learn something from this.
To your point, now Pro Football Focus, I'll be the one to tell you, especially with blocking grades, it's so subjective. But they had Philip Daniels as the second highest graded Gopher offensive lineman with an 84 grade. I mean, that's very, very good. I'll remind our listeners that the baseline for completely average 50th percentile is 60. So if you're in the 80s, you're doing something really well. Which leads me to what Pro Football Focus graded as the top right guard in all of college football last week, Quinn Carroll. What a novel concept, Luke. Quinn Carroll gets to slide inside, and Quinn Carroll has his highest graded game of the season in pass blocking and run blocking grades. Now, I don't exactly understand how that doesn't equal higher overall grades, because he had a game earlier this season where he did. But I thought Quinn looked fantastic. And also, that was Greg Johnson's best game of the year. Now, yeah, if you want to see what, what was probably his best block of the year. When you rewatch the Gopher highlights here on Monday, watch the Darius Taylor touchdown run. He works a combo block with Ashton Beers to the second level to get on the linebacker, and he absolutely puts 315 pounds on his face. I mean, that I felt like I was watching Prior Lake versus Eden Prairie, which I'm going to throw some strays at Eden Prairie being an East Metro guy. Any chance I can get, Luke, you know how we are over here. But it wasn't just one guy, and that's where I think it's exciting to see that. If it's up to me, Luke, I don't think you can put Phillip Daniels back in the bottle now. I think when Tyler Cooper gets healthy, hopefully this weekend for Rutgers, I'd slide him back in at left guard, which is unfortunate for Ashton Beers because I think he's playing better, especially since the bye. But I think reality is that's kind of the five I would roll. Ursary, Cooper, Greg Johnson, Quinn Carroll at guard, and then let Phillip Daniels get these next three, four games at right tackle. You're going to need him there for the next few years. And I was just impressed with the way that they were able to match the physicality of Brett Bielema, because that's always the biggest thing. We talked about it on the preview show, is why does Brett Bielema continue to have success, and why was Illinois ranked going into November? It's because they're so physical up front. And so for this offensive line to match that, if not really be able to run into it. Now, it helps when Illinois' top tackler leaves the game in the first half, and I believe he's got a dislocated ankle. But that's what you should do, is when their best player goes out in their linebacking core, imagine Minnesota without Cody Lindenberg, which we got had to see too often in 2023. That's what you should do. And we'll talk about Darius, but I just think this offensive line, they got to give their flowers, because I've been hard on them, but the way that Daniels played in his first career start, Quinn Carroll excelling at right guard on the fly there, because I believe that was the first time he's played there since the opener.
Yeah, since the opener.
Really, more or less consistently. Yeah. So him being able to kind of seamlessly fall in line there, and then Greg Johnson finding something. I mean, if Greg Johnson specifically can find something like this for the next three games, if your center can play that well, I mean, that's exciting, Luke.
Yeah, and it gives you some hope. You know, we talked earlier in the year, like, this is a pretty senior starting offensive line, and now you're seeing, you know, some bright spots, obviously, in Daniels and his first start. You're seeing Ashton Beers. You're seeing Greg Johnson, right? So you're getting to see some of these younger guys start to get some game, get some gameplay, and start to make a meaningful impact, and makes you feel better about next, you know, the years to come. So it was fun to see them run the ball well again, because it was able to complement the pass. But we should talk about the running backs. I did mention, you know, their stats on the day. But this was very much a Darius Taylor workhorse day, Ryan. Not just running the ball, but also receiving, because on the day receiving, he had 9 receptions for 58 yards, 6.4 yard average. He was very much target number one on the day.
Do you want to guess where Darius Taylor, who now has 43 receptions through the season, do you want to guess where those 43 receptions rank amongst all Big Ten players right now?
Oh, he's got to be in the top 10. I'll go.
Where is he in the top 10, though?
I'll give him 6.
He is number 10 in the Big Ten in receptions, okay. And I believe Daniel Jackson is 3rd.
Wow.
Like, think about that. Think about that improvement in the passing game. Now, I think Darius Taylor, when people ask me about Darius Taylor going forward, this is going to be one of the games I point to, where it was like Darius Taylor did everything in his power to play through all the bumps and bruises. And this is a game I'll remember where he really helped will this team to get over the hump, where he accounts for 189 total yards. 52% of their total yards came from Darius Taylor. And I can't say enough about him as a receiver. I think a couple of plays specifically stand out to me where it was a 3rd and long, which Minnesota lived in all day, but it didn't matter, by the way. They were 7 of 15 on 3rd down. That's exactly kind of where you want to be. Their average distance to go on 15 different 3rd downs, Luke Buehr, was 6.8 yards.
Yeah.
And they were 7 of 15. Like, are you kidding me? But the one that's going to stand out to me is Minnesota figured out, or at least it feels like it, they figured out that Illinois was going to be covering him with a linebacker, which is far too slow, and Darius was doing really well against them, or safety. And so they split him all the way out wide towards the Minnesota sidelines. It's a third and long. He runs like a hitch-and-go comeback, which I can't imagine he's practiced more than maybe once or twice in his life, and it looks seamless. He catches it. Now, I will tell you, it looked like Minnesota got a very generous spot there, potentially. I'm a little surprised they didn't review that. Catches it first down, or even the option route in the second half there where Brosmer hits him in stride, another 20 yards. Their ability to find different ways to get Darius Taylor the ball, especially when the initial play breaks down, when Elijah Spencer, Daniel Jackson, Jameson Gears, they're not open. The ability to just give it to Darius and get the second and six, second and two, God forbid a first down, has been, I just think, a revelation. Now, I thought coming into the year they were going to use the tailbacks, wrote about it. But their ability to continue to find ways to get Darius Taylor the football, and he went down, I believe, three different times where they had to give him a breather. The trainers come onto the field, but he continued to go. And I also think with this, Luke, Darius Taylor deserves a lot of credit because that was the eighth consecutive game that he's played in. Yeah. And we're coming off a year as a true freshman where it was just injury, comeback, and you didn't know. And that's one of the things I talked with him about at, say, Big Ten Media Days. And that was obviously on the record, is what can you do, or what have you been doing to try and stay on the field more? And he talked about trying to take care of his body. And I think he and the training staff deserve a lot of credit for that. But here's the thing I want to note to you, and you can tell me if I'm crazy or not. Take a guess. I looked into this before writing about it after the game. How many games do you think Darius Taylor has touched the ball 25 or more times now? And he's played in 8 games so far.
So just this season?
Just this season.
Okay. Yep. So playing 8 games. I'd go 6.
Darius Taylor has touched the ball 25 or more times twice in 2024.
Really? Okay.
Well, my point is, that's great. I honestly think that's great news. And I think some listeners are thinking to themselves, Ryan, you've officially lost it. I'm turning off the podcast. What a bobo. Well, hear me out here. How many years have we been pleading for PJ Fleck and the offensive coordinator not to run their running back into the ground in September and October so that come November, or just meaningful, very meaningful games down the stretch, you can put a little bit more tread on the tires? And this is where we're at. This is what I would point to, that they have tread on the tires of Darius Taylor because they haven't run him into the ground. Now, this isn't me saying he's not touching the ball enough, because he's been touching the ball on average probably around 20 to 22 times a game. Great. Marcus Major can play a little bit more in those games, and they have. But that's what I'm excited about with a game like this is, yeah, you put 31 touches on him. He played through the bumps and the bruises. But my point is, why was he able to do so? Because Fleck and Harbaugh and whoever else is making these decisions didn't run him into the ground, so that when you get into a game like this, a ranked road opponent in the Big Ten, you can put a little bit more on him. Now, what do you think of that? Do you think I'm crazy?
No, I think you're right. I was surprised. I thought, you know, given the number of snaps, the number of receptions that he has, that he would have been higher. But in the same respect, like, it's not every game like this one where you get 9 receptions. So, you know, the fact he had 22 carries, that seems about on par, and probably where you're going to deviate up or down in terms of touches this year is in the receptions. So, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Ultimately, you know, the spell from Marcus Major as well, having 5 carries for 20 yards, has been nice. And, you know, he has been a factor in the passing game as well. He wasn't in this specific game. But knowing that you really don't have significant drop-off even in that reception, in that receiving department as well, has been really crucial.
Well, and that's even where, with Darius and the Marcus split, I just think it's so game-dependent, and I'm okay with that. Again,
yeah, for sure.
Darius is going to get his. They're going to find ways to get Darius the football, which is why he's played in 8 games now, Luke.
Yeah.
He has, I believe, about 950-ish total yards, 10 touchdowns. Great. That's exactly where I think everyone would say, Oh, Darius is at about 1,000 total yards. He's averaging, I don't know, 120, 125. Can't do the math this late at night. But in a just over a touchdown per game, yeah, that seems about right. Well, great. They're just finding different ways to do so because you have a second back that you trust in Marcus Major. Now, we haven't really had a game where it's like this was the Marcus Major game or this was the Marcus Major drive. Maybe that's coming here against Rutgers, Penn State, or Wisconsin. But just the ability to have Fleck be able to trust another back, which he does, obviously, with Marcus Major, I just think has been an under-talked about part of this offense is, yes, this thing ran through Darius, and he deserves all of the credit for what he was able to do on Saturday in Champaign. But I just think there's so much more context around that. But, again, Darius playing through those bumps and bruises, and I know some people are worried, well, did they run him into the ground against this Illinois team? From what I've heard here on Sunday night, I expect him to play against Rutgers. Now, is he at 100%? Obviously not, but they got a bye week after that, and they know that they're going to need him against Rutgers, Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about the passing game quickly. Max Brosmer on the day, 27 to 37. You know, you look at the completions to attempts, maybe not as high as we expect, which is crazy to think where we've come from. But he still had a good day with 213 yards, one touchdown, a very crucial go-ahead touchdown too, by the way, on that fake tush push. But he put some balls just absolutely on the money. Just thinking about the one to Darius Taylor, just catches him in stride, which ended up being a long gainer. Maybe not his best day in terms of accuracy at times, but did enough to give him the win. And he had the long one to Daniel Jackson, which was credit to Jackson and his ability to sell that and have the defender have no idea he even caught the ball, basically. But all in all, in the passing game, you did enough, even though they were really trying to take that away and play coverage, Ryan.
Yeah, before I get into specific plays and drives, I want to pose this one to you. If this is the floor for Max Brosmer at this stage of the season, where you look up at the end of the day and it's 60% completion percentage with no turnovers and one touchdown, what a floor.
Yeah.
My response. Like, yeah. We have seen, and we talked about in the preview, Gopher quarterbacks against Illinois had been absolutely awful the last 3 years. They were completing 47% of their passes.
And that's a credit to Illinois. Like, we got to give Illinois credit for that because they've made it very hard. Like, they've had some really good defenses, and they often have been able to take away what you do well.
Correct. And I think Illinois had a great game plan for Max Brosmer and this passing offense. And it's why Ryan Walters is the head coach at Purdue, is because this Illinois defense and Aaron Henry, I believe, is a disciple or someone with intricate knowledge, I will say, of what the way Brett Bielema and Ryan Walters want things defensively. It's a very difficult defense to go against. Pre-snap, they show you one thing. Post-snap, it's something different. And I think Minnesota ran into that a little bit more often than they were anticipating. I think you saw them try to take some shots that weren't there, which resulted in either Max Brosmer taking a sack, Max Brosmer kind of running up to the line or throwing it away. But that's what makes this Illinois defense so difficult, is they show you one thing and they can do a multitude of different things after that. I do think one of the adjustments that, at least in my eyes, they made, especially in the second half, was you saw Minnesota go to more 4 and 5 wide. Now, I don't know if they thought they had a tell about what the coverage would be or what the idea was, but I think if you were to look at Minnesota's success rate going 4 and 5 wide in the second half, I'd imagine it's probably a little bit better than when they were in 12 personnel. But I will just continue to come back to with Brosmer. There was about one throw I can think of specifically where he put the ball in harm's way, which was a third down pass to Jamison Gears off his back foot, which I'm sure he's going to get reamed out for, as he should. It was a bad throw. And he missed Daniel Jackson early in the game for what would have been a 25-ish, I believe, yard touchdown. He missed him again in the end zone. Max Brosmer wasn't on his A game. But I think my response back will just continue to be, if this isn't his A game, say this is his C game.
Yeah.
60% completion percentage and no turnovers. And then when you needed him most in the fourth quarter, you needed him after Illinois goes up 17-16. He dials up his best pass of the day, which I will continue to say, an absolute dime. You cannot place that any better where, to your point, the Illinois corner has no idea where the ball is. He's looking the wrong way as the ball arrives and Daniel Jackson makes the catch. But just key throws from Brosmer, and he continues to find something in the fourth quarter. He didn't have it all day.
Yep.
But he found it when this team needed it most, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, 100%. And you know who else deserves credit in this game too is and really all season. Obviously, Jackson gets the accolades, but Elijah Spencer continues to be a reliable number two. And at times, you know, he's made some really tough catches. He's had a number of touchdowns so far this season. But on the day, six receptions for 67 yards. And, you know, he used that hospital ball. That was pretty clever there. But he held on to a really meaningful
catch. I don't
know
how he held on because he gets absolutely smoked. And he knows he's going to get smoked. But it's such a huge play there to hang on to that, and credit to him.
Yeah, and Jamison Gears too. Like, yeah, I think he had a drop on the day, but you know, got that go ahead touchdown. He has definitely shown that he can play a real meaningful role and has made some tough catches. And you know, I know that when you think back to years before, you know, we talked a lot about you can't just turn the passing game on. It's developed over time. And, you know, some of the synergy that you're seeing is a result of just continuing to work at it and continuing to build, you know, connectivity between some of these guys. And I still expect to see other guys contribute as the season goes on. But, you know, between Daniel Jackson, Darius Taylor, Elijah Spencer, and Jamison Gears, those have been the three stalwarts all season, the only guys that had receptions on the day.
Yeah, Elijah Spencer has found something off the bye. It's back-to-back games now with six receptions. Of his six receptions against the Illini, five of them resulted in a first down. It's exactly where you want to be if you're a slot guy like Elijah Spencer, which I have gotten the question of, because I put up Pro Football Focus snap reports every late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, and Lemecki Brockington continues to out-snap Elijah Spencer, and I get people saying, well, why is that?
Well, yeah, go ahead.
It's because Elijah Spencer plays primarily in the slot. So yep. Then when Minnesota goes into their 12 personnel with two tight ends, that means there's only two receivers on the field. And Lemecki Brockington, while he may not get targeted very much, or as Luke's favorite son would tell you, well, you don't have a favorite son. You're going to be diplomatic at this stage of your fatherhood. Lemecki Rocket Ship.
Yeah.
He is the best run blocker they have at receiver. So they're going to keep him on the field in those 12 personnel packages. So when they go 11 personnel, 10 personnel, that's why Elijah Spencer gets on the field then. He's the slot guy, predominantly slot. Plays about 70, 75% there. But back-to-back games with six receptions, huge catches in this one. Now, I know he did leave the game late. My sources tell me he's going to be ready to go for Rutgers, so that's good news. But I would just describe the day overall for Elijah Spencer the same way I would describe it for this passing game. And I think it's an overused word in the game of football, Luke, but gritty.
Mm-hmm. That's a great, I think that's a great word.
It wasn't perfect. It wasn't aesthetically pleasing at times, but it was an honest day's work. And it was one that they got it done when they needed to get it done, because Illinois' objective was very clear, especially on third down. If you watch Illinois on third down, I would tell you on 80% of those 15 third downs that Minnesota faced, they were doubling Daniel Jackson. Now, whether that was with a safety over the top, whether that was with cloud coverage, whether it was with bracketing, they said on third down, Daniel Jackson, you are not going to beat us.
Yeah.
So for Elijah Spencer to have six catches and five of them go for first downs, he and Darius Taylor were so critical on those third down conversions throughout the entire day. But that's kind of the way I would describe the day for the passing game overall. Was it wasn't great. It wasn't their best, but boy, was it gritty.
Yeah, and again, I just want to give Illinois credit. They knew what Minnesota did well. They tried to take it away. And then to Max Brosmer and Harbaugh's credit, they just kind of took what the defense gave them and tried to do the best they could. And you know, it wasn't super flashy, but in the end, it got them the victory, and that's really all that matters.
It is. Now, I will say the one play call I want to talk about offensively is the fake tush push into the Jamison Gears touchdown late. It's one we asked PJ Fleck after the game about, and I believe it's a true story where he hears the play call, and it's one of those where you know, and he said, he went, excuse me? And that's where he goes. Then on the headset, Matt Simon, the receivers coach, goes, yeah, good call. Eric Kaler, the tight ends coach, yep, that's a good one. But then Fleck highlights when the old grizzled offensive line coach and Brian Callahan, who rarely speaks on the headset, chimes in and says, yeah, let's do it. Fleck finally gets behind it, and it's incredibly well executed. Darius Taylor sprints out to the left. Jamison Gears is right behind Max Brosmer, who kind of does the fake audible. Gears jets out to the right. Nobody's there. Easy pitch and catch. Gears gets redemption for an earlier drop.
Yep.
Touchdown in his home state of Illinois. That's a heck of a play call in a big spot in the fourth quarter there, by the way.
It was, but it, you know, you kind of build for some of those moments all season, right? Because you show one thing and then you have the opportunity to exploit what you've shown on film, and they did it. And I was all for it. I thought that was a great great play call, even better execution, and awesome for Jamison to, you know, redeem himself and get that touchdown at home.
So, I mean, overall for the offense, you look up at the end of the day and you get 25 points against a ranked team on the road. Yeah, that'll do it. Now, could they have been better in the red zone? Yes. I ain't going to be the one to dispute it.
Yeah, no doubt.
But Illinois also has good players. 100%. And they were able to get pressure with four at times during certain drives. They still have a very good defensive scheme. Here's what I would tell you about their scheme. And I've talked with our co-host, Derek Burns, for over an hour today, and he wanted me to make this clear, is Illinois' defensive scheme is probably top four of all the opponents Minnesota will face this year, with how difficult it is to try and game plan and then execute against, with how complex it is and the different nuances within it. So to look up at the end of the day and have 25 points, be 7 of 15 on third down, have 361 yards of total offense, I think that's a pretty good place to be, Luke Buehr.
Yeah, I don't think that's anything to scoff at. You know, areas they maybe could have improved, maybe could have played with a little bit more tempo. I think that it was very clear that Bielema and his staff were trying to do anything they could to keep it a low possession game, which they were able to do successfully. You know, all in all, I was pleased offensively with what they've done, and largely I've been pleased all season. So it was great to see the output they were able to get, getting 25 points on the number 24 team in the country and getting yourself into bowl eligibility. That was awesome. So let's take a quick break, Ryan, unless this is a bad time for you. You got more things you want to hit on. Otherwise, we'll catch a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk defense special teams.
Let's come back and talk a little bit about Corey Heatherman's defense.
Ryan, Dinkytown Real Estate Group is here to support Gopher Gridiron Radio and, more importantly, Dinkytown athletes and the athletes that it serves. You know, the weather is getting colder, but that doesn't mean that it's not a good time to buy a house. It's oftentimes when you can get some of the best deals in the market. These are experienced real estate agents that are going to take a portion of their commission, and it's going to go directly to Dinkytown athletes to support their initiatives on NIL. So if you are looking to buy or sell your house, please reach out to this very veteran group of real estate agents that can help you get the best bang for your buck.
They continue to sell houses well above asking, or if you're just trying to figure out, how do I get into the, I want to buy a home and I don't know anybody and I know it's complicated to get into. What I want you to do, go to teamdinkytown.com, all one word, or you can just give them a call. They'd love to talk to you at 612-250-8562.
Ryan, the Burns Insurance Agency is here again to support Gopher Gridiron Radio. I know it's getting colder out, Ryan. I'm starting to see some snow in the forecast. That can mean two things, right? Number one, it can mean you're going to get your snowmobiles out soon. Or number two, it can mean roads are going to get slick and there are going to be accidents. Let's make sure you have the best coverage possible for the best price possible.
Exactly. And that's what the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father, wants to do. They believe in service, service, and service. They don't want to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. They know that's not possible. But they want to be the one that gives you the best possible coverage at the best possible price while putting your needs first. Now, They are not just licensed in the great state of Minnesota. It's both of the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So if you think you're paying too much for your home, your auto, whatever little toy that you do have, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or email them bill@insurancebyburns.com.
All right, let's talk about the Gopher defense, who is able to hold the Illini to 17 points on the day. They held them scoreless in the odd quarters, Ryan. No points in the first, no points in the third. Gave up 10 and 7, respectively, in the two even quarters. But all in all, Ryan, I think the thing that stood out to me was just the number of tackles for losses at 8 and the number of sacks at 4. And then also the passes defensed. It was all in all a really good day for the defense.
Well, that's the thing is, here's going to be your hot take of the day. I don't know that one individual player outside of, I would say, probably Kerry Brown played really well.
Yeah.
But I think collectively as a unit, they played really well, if that makes sense. It wasn't,
yeah, for sure.
It wasn't stolen, and stolen's not the right word. But it wasn't just like a couple of individual key performances throughout 60 minutes that got them to the end result, which is two takeaways, a turnover on downs, only 17 points on the board, a very sporadic Illini offensive effort. It was different guys on different drives and just a collective ability to make plays when it mattered. Now, we talked about coming into this game how Luke Altmyer led the Big Ten in fumbles. What does Minnesota do on their second drive of the game? Justin Wally and Danny Strigow get him held up. Strigow gets his right arm on the ball. Now, if Justin Wally, on the first time he attempts to pick it up, he might win the foot race for a long touchdown. But he doesn't get it clean, which allows Maverick Baranowski to see he doesn't get it clean. And he dives right at the ankle of Justin Wally to fall on it. That's a great job by the senior defensive end, Danny Strigow, being able to get that out. And then ultimately what ends the game is Ja Joyner, who we'll get to Ja Joyner and him only playing 18 snaps on the day because he's banged up because he played in a game against Maryland when there's 2 minutes left. They're up 4 scores. Why is he in the game? But he gets his best rep of the entire day where he beats the right tackle with speed initially, and then he bursts through him his right shoulder with power to get his left hand on the football. Who else? Yet again, but Danny Strigow right there to jump on it. They are just so opportunistic as a defense. And that doesn't even include these two turnovers. They don't include the turnover on downs from Kerry Brown on that drive. That's the thing that just continues to stand out to me is the way that this defense and the helter-skelter and the chaos of it, they're going to give up explosive plays at times, which we'll talk about a couple of explosive plays. But their ability to then make the plays or continually make the plays, especially in these, you look at this 4-game winning streak. You got the Coy Parrish interception against USC to end it. You got the Coy Parrish interception against UCLA to end it. You have now the Ja Joyner forced fumble to end it.
Also,
they love the spotlight at the end of the game.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's also worth noting that Danny Strigow makes a great play to actually recover that, too.
To have the awareness that. I asked him about it after the game, what his perspective was on that play. And he said, I didn't win on my rush. So then I was trying to set up a second move. And as I was doing so, he gets his out of his peripheral on the right side of his face. He sees the ball hit the ground and he goes, oh boy, I got to jump on that. Now you'll watch the left tackle doesn't know what he's doing. Cause you can see Danny start to go down to his right. And the left tackle's like, okay, I'm going to push you towards it. And then he figures out what Danny's doing, and so Danny's able to jump on it. But, yes, that's great awareness there.
Yeah, and that obviously sealed the game for them, as you noted. And I think at this point, you know, it's safe to say that the turnovers are by no means a fluke. We've talked about this before, that you are going to see – this is going to be a very different defense – than what you saw in previous years under Joe Rossi. It can maybe be frustrating to see them give up some explosive plays, but you got to live with those because there are times that you're also going to make explosive plays yourself, in which the Gophers are able to do defensively this week. I cited the number of tackles for loss and sacks that they had, but also passes defended and then the two turnovers. And that's really what was able to make their hay and allow them to get this win.
Well, that's arguably the story of this four-game winning streak, and this game includes that, is the Gophers offensively are not turning over the football. Minnesota has now gone over 14 quarters since they last turned over the football. That was when Darius put it on the ground right before halftime against USC. They have not committed a turnover in over 3.5 games. Do you know how freaking rare that is for a college football offense to not turn over the football? Yeah. And then on the flip side, I believe Minnesota has forced 9 turnovers since their offense has last put the ball on the ground and had it taken away. I mean, when you are just consistently game after game after game, plus 2, plus 3, there's a reason that PJ Fleck includes it in his 78% that he always looks at.
Yeah.
Is the take, give, explosive plays, and missed tackling. Well, not only are you winning the take, give, you are destroying teams in the take, give, which, think about this game specifically. Minnesota wins by 8 points at the end of the day. They get the early fumble. Minnesota's offense gets a field goal. Turnover on downs in the fourth quarter, Minnesota gets a field goal. And now you look up at the end of the day, why is Illinois having to go play for a touchdown there instead of a field goal? It's because your offense capitalized off the two turnovers. But if you don't have the two turnovers, that fourth quarter in that second half is so different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's why they're number one in the Big Ten. They have 19 takeaways and only 7 turnovers through 9 games this season. They're plus 12. Now, I tweeted this out. In the PJ Fleck era, okay, Luke, what do you think their best year is at the end of the year in the take-give?
Man, Rob Smith wasn't great at turning them over. Neither was Rossi. I'd say, like, maybe plus 6?
They were plus 5 in 2022.
Wow.
And as we sit here through 9 games, they are plus 12. I mean, that is obviously top in the Big Ten. I'll have to look here and see where it ranks nationally. But if you are plus 12, do you know how hard it is not to be 6-3?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not taking that away from them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they are the number 4 team in all of college football in the take give. They only trailed James Madison, Cal, and Tulane. Like, they are plus 12. I mean, why is your favorite Gopher team, college football team, 6-3? The number one thing I would point to outside of quarterback play is how many turnovers their defense continues to force. I mean, that's such a huge, huge part of this game, and it was another story yet on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll continue to be something that we'll have to monitor. It makes me think often, Ryan, this season, like, why hasn't PJ, you know, forced this kind of style? I know that it's not in Rossi's identity, but this was part of my frustration, was if you're going to try and, you know, not go for explosive plays on offense, you have to try and get them on defense, right? And this is the thing that was always frustrating for me, the ball control on both sides of the ball. But ultimately, I have been really pleased with what we've seen from the Heatherman group thus far. And part of it is they have the back end with especially the safety play that they're able to get to help make these plays.
Well, that I'm so glad you brought it up, because just safety play in this game. Now, I'll be the one to say it. I think Coy Parrish had
one of his rougher games.
I would say his roughest game as a Golden Gopher.
And
Pro Football Focus would certainly agree with me on that.
Yeah.
I think he was the lowest rated Gopher who played double digit snaps. Now, he only did play 33 snaps in this game, but I think part of that is because he just wasn't playing well, and Kerry Brown and Aiden Goosby were. And
can I ask you a question just on him in general? Does it surprise you, though, that he has his roughest game against a Brett Bielema-led team from a scheme perspective?
Just in terms of how diverse Barry Lunny's
Barry Lunny
playbook was?
Yeah, but I always feel like they're so well prepared to kind of out-scheme the other team and, you know, play on their weaknesses, right? It just doesn't surprise me that this was the game.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, and that's okay.
Yeah, we can disagree.
I just think he was kind of due for some regression of the mean, where And he was the highest graded, I think, Pro Football Focus true freshman in the country. He's due to have a game like this where,
yeah,
on the 40-plus yard touchdown run, he's the last line of defense there. He takes a poor angle, gets too far inside, misses the tackle.
Yep.
He gets very, very fortunate that on that final Illini drive, that he doesn't get flagged for 15 yards and a potential targeting call.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I have no idea how that wasn't looked at, or at least there was no flag there. Now,
So this is just my perspective. I think, you know, watching a fair amount of college football, I think they've been a lot less likely to give late hits on slides this year. I don't know if it's been a point of emphasis, but Coy could have just absolutely blown him up. He did kind of pull up a little bit, but couldn't pull up his whole momentum. I'm not justifying that it shouldn't have been a penalty.
I don't disagree with you. I would just say I don't know what's a flag and what's not because of how inconsistent that type of play has been called.
Yeah, for sure.
Even throughout, it could be called differently in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter.
Yeah, for sure.
But I would just say it's okay that Coy didn't play well.
Yeah.
I would say this. I would hope that Coy learns more from this because it's a win.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was still a positive team result from this that maybe you can. And this isn't me saying anything about Coach Billy or anything. Everything I've heard is he's great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it's a lot easier to learn after a win than after a loss.
Yeah,
and so that's where with Coy not playing his best game, Kerry Brown has. Again, everybody wants to talk about Coy and just to flat. And again, I'm not taking that away from anybody, but if you look at the PFF stuff, I don't disagree with their rankings of the Gopher, this Gopher defense. The number one ranked player is Coy Parrish. Number two is Kerry Brown with an 85 overall grade, including an 85 tackling grade, or excuse me, 85 run defense grade. His ability to close space and then attack the space is some of the best I've seen from a young Gopher safety in a very long time. Like, he is a different player than the Newbins and the Winfields and the Jordan Howdens. I think he's more physical. I think he's very much, this is going to sound, I'm just full of football cliches that you hear on like Sunday Night Football. He's a gamer.
Yeah.
Like, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy. He's not the twitchiest guy. But he is very football smart, and he's very aggressive, and he's very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I don't know how you can't be excited about Coy, Kerry, and then everybody left for dead, Aiden Goosby.
Yeah,
I saw it all. And look, he hadn't been playing well. But this is now the fourth consecutive game in which Pro Football Focus has assigned him an 80-plus tackling grade, which if you can get sure tackling – that is why you haven't seen as many explosive plays.
Mm-hmm.
He is not giving up explosive plays in pass coverage, and he's preventing them in the run game. His tackling ability is turning, making sure it's an 8 or a 12-yard gain instead of a 58-yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Aiden Goosby deserves a lot of credit for getting better after it was a slow start to the season for him. Now, he's battled some injury. He's come back from them. Now, I don't know if it's just a change in his preparation, if he's just playing that much more confident, but I will also continue to say pay Danny Collins because this was the biggest question mark we had coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's one of the things I look to in the offseason here, which is approaching far, far too quickly, which is why we have to savor every moment of this college football season for these next few weeks. I don't know how you can't look at safety and not be tremendously excited about the future.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one thing to note, too, is we can hit these quickly. Really good to have Maverick Baranowski back again, right? Not saying that he or the linebackers played a perfect game by any means, but getting those rotations with him and Williams and Lindenberg in is definitely better than having him out. He's definitely been better. Justin Wally and Ethan Robinson, neither played like incredible games. Wally obviously makes a big play that helps force the turnover, but all in all, your point about the collective group, playing well enough was really a good point, right? Nobody was spectacular, but it's been a blast.
Well, it's just different guys where maybe one drive it was Justin Wally, maybe one drive it was Kerry Brown, maybe be one drive. It was Anthony Smith throughout this winning streak. I think you'll see Anthony Smith, as he did in this game. There's just a drive where he shuts down Illinois. He's able to get pressure, forces errant throws. If you can get him to play like that, because he's always going to be one of the guys you look at if you ever stand next to him. I say this as someone who is 6'4", 240 pounds. He's one of the people you want first off the bus, because be 6'6" and 280 pounds and be as lean as he is at that, yeah, there's a reason why Illinois tried to block him with the tight end and he just bended the corner and then ragdolled Altmaier to the turf. Now, the thing I do want to touch on, though, is Jaw Joyner, because I talked about on the preview about how I'd heard he was banged up. Now, I use the word hobbled after the game. I saw him pregame. I saw him postgame. He's not 100%.
No.
And his snap share would tell you that as well. Jaw Joyner in this game only played 18 snaps. That's like 30% of the defensive snaps, roughly. That tells me he was not healthy, which he should have never been in that game against Maryland. And he wasn't incredibly effective when he was on the field. Now, on his 18 snaps, 13 of them were on passing downs, or in pass rush situations, which should be the case. But the funny part about football is, Luke, Illinois is driving down the field on their last drive to try and tie the game with a touchdown two-point conversion. That was the first play that Jaw Joyner saw on that drive.
Yes.
It's a three-man rush, and anything he had in the tank, I would have loved to have been on the headset before that play, or at least hear what defensive line coach Winston DeLattie-Boudere or Corey Heatherman or PJ Fleck said to him, because that kid was shot out of a cannon, looked like the NFL draft pick he is soon to be in the spring, and then he completely alters the game. Like, that was exciting to see for me. Now, he needs the bye week in the worst way because he's clearly not at 100%. But that's the exciting part to me about this defense, is Altmaier was flustered. I mean, in the third quarter, Luke Altmaier didn't complete a pass. He was 0-6. There was almost two pick sixes where there's a deflection.
Yeah.
Maverick Baranowski just misses one. And then Cody Lindenberg nearly has one. He's clearly flustered throughout that entire third quarter. I can't say enough about the, I shouldn't say randomness, but the chaotic nature of Corey Heatherman disguising when he's going to bring pressure, because it's never obvious when that's going to be. It could be first down, second down, third down, could be second and short, could be third and long. His ability to keep opposing quarterbacks guessing, I think it's one of the most under-talked about parts of why Minnesota's pass defense continues to be so strong, is because opposing quarterbacks have stretches like Altmaier did in the third quarter where it's clear they are swimming for their life in their head trying to figure out where it's coming from, and Heatherman deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, for sure. And I, you know, I've been vocal that I like the scheme and the approach much more this way. I think it makes it more difficult for offenses. I understand certain people prefer the bend but don't break. That's just not been me. And I agree that Heatherman deserves credit. And, you know, they've had some pieces and they found a way to stay relatively healthy. That's also been, you know, knock on wood, to their advantage. You really hope that they continue to stay healthy, because they're not a particularly deep defensive unit probably. But, you know, at the end of the day, they've been able to be effective. Not necessarily efficient, but definitely effective. You want to talk a little special teams?
Yeah, there's some good, and there's some interesting decisions.
I want to point this out. We talked about Minnesota was, you know, statistically, according to some of these analytics platforms like Kelly Ford and I forget, and then I think it was NCAA Insiders, right? They had them, you know, basically on opposite ends of the bell curve, right?
Illinois was on the very positive side, and Minnesota was on the very negative side, and I'm going to steal your thunder here. It looked like the complete opposite.
100%. And the stats bear it out, right? Minnesota, if you look at total EPA for the special teams, was a positive 2.8, and Illinois was a minus 0.65. That's their best mark all season. Yes.
And I want people to hear this. That's me giving them a little collective clap there. Yeah. If I break them down, I got to gas them up. I got to be fairness here.
Yep. Dragon had a great day. I think, what was it, 4 field goals on the day that he made? even getting pushed back. Sorry for clearing my throat there. Even getting pushed back from 41 to 46, he's able to nail that. 13 total points, 101 on extra points. They went for the 2-point conversion, so he didn't get another attempt. He was the very bright spot on the day.
I'm excited for him, man, because like I said, especially in the college game, you get to know these kids and their kids. I mean, Dragon Kesich is, he's 21, 22 now, but he is one of the best personalities on the team. And he's someone that even myself as a member of the media, because of how, fun he is to be around, and how much he affects the other people on the team with his personality, how great he is in the locker room. Somebody you kind of pull for maybe more than most. Wasn't the start to the season that any people, I think, had for him, 7-13. He goes into the bye week. And we actually got to talk to him after the game for the first time, essentially, since the preseason. And he'd be the first one to tell you. They had to figure some things out during the bye week, including him just being able to find his process again. Find his technique. I mean, I had a lot of people tell me, Luke, we're thinking about too much that Dragon has missed all 6 field goals to the right. He's the one who brought it up unprompted to us in the media afterwards. Yeah. He's well aware. Yeah. So for him to now come out of the bye week, be 6 of 6 on field goals, 4 of 4 against the Illini. He's going to be up for special teams player of the week, might even win it. I mean, there were some big spot kicks in this game, where including one before the end of the first half. Minnesota really needed to get points there. They do with a 45-yard make. Or to your point, that last drive for Minnesota's offense, it doesn't go the way that they thought. They go with the Darius Taylor run on third down. It's not executed up front. Darius has somebody in his face. And then your star left tackle false starts on the first field goal attempt. And you're thinking to yourself, oh boy, here you go. Minnesota sports, the kicker, he's going to get in his head, puts that thing. You can't put it in a better spot down the center of it from 46. So I'm excited because we talked about during the bye week, what's the biggest thing that could happen to turn around special teams if Dragon Kesich regains that form that he was so good with last year? Minnesota doesn't win this game without Dragon Kesich, and I'm so excited for him. Again, he's somebody you root for with that personality, and he was massive in this game on Saturday. We'll see early this week if he's rewarded with Special Teams Player of the Week.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say this was one of Coy's better returning games. Probably should have caught one that he didn't catch. Ends up pinning him deep. It wasn't anything great on kickoff returns as well. Again, we could argue whether or not the blocking was good enough. All in all, I didn't think returning was really a net positive. Anything else you want to add on returning? It kind of was what it was.
It was what it was. I mean, it's one of the most 20 most impactful things from this game. We don't spend any time.
No, for sure. Mark Crawford actually had a pretty decent day punting, Ryan. 3 punts.
He won the punting battle. That's for dang sure.
Yeah. 3 punts for a 48-yard average along with 51. Definitely won the punting battle. Then I guess we got to get to
Robertson was not good.
No, he wasn't. But I guess we got to get to the fake punt there. So from my vantage point, I don't think that was called. I think that was, I saw this and so I went for it. What was your take?
Here's what I would say, to address apparently the elephant in the room, because I've got some folks that aren't too keen with me on special teams and how I was called a hypocrite today by a Gopher Illustrated member who I respect. It's an absolutely insane decision to me. Insane that you even think about taking it. Now, here's the situation, just to remind everybody, okay? Just to remind you, it's 4th and 12, and that is important. The 12 part is exponentially important. It's 4th and 12 at your own 44. Mark Crawford is having one of his better punting days of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You have the ability to pin an Illini offense, of which I will remind you, Luke. Luke Altmaier did not complete a freaking pass in the third quarter. So he is ice cold. And if you pin him deep, I don't know what happens. Who knows what happens? Like, they hadn't really been able to do much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the read. And that's where PJ Fleck talked about after the game. He did not call it, but the way he phrased it, he said he didn't red light it. So he didn't throw up the stop sign. He also didn't green light it in terms of he did not call Mark Crawford, go run this thing.
Yeah.
I truly believe this. And I'll explain why. The only person who knew that this was going to be a fake punt was Mark Crawford.
Yeah, and I think part of it was, the sell on that only Crawford knew it was going to be the fake punt was the guy that ends up tackling him could have easily been blocked and should have been accounted for on a fake.
That is exactly my point, because the one person or one of the two people who are the upbacks there on punt is Derek LeCaptain. And let me tell you about Derek LeCaptain. He is one of the players on this team that is the most well-prepared, and I have the utmost respect for. You know he is going to do his job. You know he knows exactly what's going on. If Derek LeCaptain has no idea that this is going to be a fake, because he could have easily blocked that guy. I mean, what? You got to at least give somebody an indication here, because Mark Crawford, for those of you who don't remember, is, I believe, 30 or 31 years old.
Yeah.
Like, truly, I'm not joking. He is from Australia. He is 30 years old, I believe. And because he is 10 yards back, he has to win a foot race as a 30-year-old. And I say that as a 32-year-old against 18 to 23-year-olds. If this would have been 4th and 5, I think my tune would be very much changed. And I would say, absolutely, that's the read. But 4th and 12, and you're 10 yards, 15 yards back, whatever he is, you have to win a foot race for 25 yards as a punter.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets 10 of them. But that's my point in this whole deal, Luke, is that 4th and 12, it completely flipped this game where he ends up fumbling. Now, I'm a little surprised they didn't even review that play. As someone who is live at Champaign, they never even looked at it. Like, they never brought anything out. So it must have been clear as day that he was short. Clear as day, but you allow Illinois to get some momentum, in which 5 plays later, they score a touchdown going right at Justin Wally's replacement. I just think the situation is just the most important part within this. I can't imagine. Like, I bet you PJ didn't know until he looked up. And how are we here? Does that make sense? How is it the only person who really knew what was going on was the punter, because it's his call? They got a specific look they were looking for where everybody turned and went because Crawford was going with a rugby-style punt to his right. But if you just let somebody know, either Derek LeCaptain or I believe the other upback is Nick Kallerup, who is the best blocking tight end on the freaking roster, can easily account for the one guy who makes the play.
Mm-hmm.
I just, again, situation is the whole thing here. I have been begging for them to be aggressive, but my goodness, did it almost backfire on them.
I don't know that it bugs.
I understand hindsight is 2020 within this too.
I guarantee you
I would have been saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Because 4th and 12 at your own 44, when Luke Altmaier has not completed a bleeping pass in the half so far.
Yeah,
hit him deep. He's not going to lead him 85 yards, probably.
Yeah, I think
that up 6 points. What are we doing?
Yeah, I think hindsight's really helpful in this situation. I tend to like a little bit more aggressive nature, and I've never seen. I don't know that Mark Crawford has ever run it. So when he started,
which is makes this whole thing so much more like, what is happening?
Yeah, he wasn't as fleet of foot as I would have hoped, but.
Look, Luke, you'll understand when you get to your 30s, you might lose a step. And he is a former rugby player. He is very used to carrying the football back in his Australia days.
Yeah.
But it's been a few years since then, Luke.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Anything else you want to hit on special teams? I don't think there's anything else we got.
No. Again, I commend Dragan Kesich for finding it out of the bye week, because his play in this game can't be understated. As much time as we spent on the punt deal, Dragan's impact on this game is why your Gopher team is now in a 4-game winning streak.
All right, let's just hit on a couple of Big Ten games quickly, okay? I'm mostly going to hit on the teams that the Gophers will be playing. One notable exception from the games that we're going to talk about is Rutgers, because Rutgers was on a bye this week, so they did not play. But the next game would be the Gophers would host Penn State. Penn State lost to Ohio State 20-13 in Happy Valley. Will Howard really accounted for basically all the scoring in this game, Ryan, when it came to, I think there was a defense, or I think he had a turnover that went to a touchdown. He also had two touchdowns thrown himself. You know, it was really a homecoming, and the homecoming he wanted.
Yeah, he throws the pick six early, and you're thinking to yourself, oh boy, Penn State's finally going to do it. Big game James is finally going to come out. And then I'll say this, as much as it was Will Howard, I thought Chip Kelly was in his bag, man. I mean, there were some play calls throughout that game where it's like Chip's had this thing waiting and ready to go, and they execute it when they need be. I'd also say, why is James Franklin chirping fans after the game?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Look, fans are chirping him, and he starts chirping back about, what's your name? Like, be a man. Stand up. Tell me what your name is.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, like, you have to know, it's a top four game.
Mm-hmm.
Or the number three team versus the number four team. There is going to be a camera on you at all times. And, yeah, fans are going to heckle you. It sucks sometimes. They say some things that they probably wouldn't say if their name was going to be on it. But you can't start chirping them back. Again, I don't think Penn State's out of the playoff conversation at all.
No.
I still think they're in a spot where they could potentially host the playoff game, which is still absolutely a successful season for Penn State. But one of these years, Luke, Franklin's got to get over the hump against Michigan and Ohio State there.
All right. Iowa beats Wisconsin, the Gophers' last the last opponent of the season, 42-10, Ryan. Iowa only attempted 10 forward passes, completing 7 of them, and they ran for 330 yards on 53 carries.
Goodness gracious, Wisconsin. Now, Iowa deserves their credit because they've made the change to Brendan Sullivan.
Yep.
Caleb Johnson continues to be tremendous, but there's also 3 other ball carriers with 56 or more yards. Like the Iowa tailbacks and the Iowa offensive line, and that Iowa offensive line specifically just gave it right to Wisconsin. And now we all know that Kinnick is very difficult to play in at night, especially if things start to snowball. But Braden Locke continues to make 2 or 3 decisions a game where it's almost getting to the point where I wouldn't change quarterbacks just yet because, oh, by the way, now they have to face Oregon off their bye week. But going into that Nebraska game, I wonder if they change quarterbacks, if it's here we go yet again, because Braden Locke, I don't think, is the answer.
All right. Number one, Oregon knocks off Michigan 38-17. Not a lot to say here. Oregon rolls. I also want to note that Indiana continues their roll 47-10, beating Michigan.
They actually start losing in a game. They're down 10-0 at the end of the first.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. They were down 10-0 at the end of the first, but then up 21-10. They scored 21 points in the second quarter, and then they blanked them in the third and fourth as well to amass 47-10.
I mean, Indiana is just a juggernaut right now.
They are.
What a world we live in that it's November 3rd, and we're talking about the juggernaut that is Indiana, that they finally see a little adversity, and they score 47 unanswered. I mean, as much as it is Curtis Rourke who returned in this game for 263 yards and 4 scores, this Illini defense was just all over the king of chaos that is Aiden Chiles. Signetti's got this thing rolling. I cannot wait until they play Ohio State.
Yeah. Quickly, Northwestern beats Purdue 26-0. UCLA pulls it off against Nebraska.
You doubted Ethan Garbers yet again. I want that noted for the record.
I did. I doubted him.
White hot UCLA, by the way. They play the Gophers, start to find a little mojo, and now they've got two straight road Big Ten wins.
Yeah, and now we talked about this in the pre-production or in the preview episode, but you know, UCLA beats Nebraska. Now Nebraska has SC, followed by Wisconsin and Iowa to try and get one more win to get them into bowl eligibility. SC then loses to my Washington Huskies, which was very nice to see. You always like to see SC lose to the Huskies. They lost 26-21.
Did you see Lincoln Riley's comment after the game? And
no.
I'm paraphrasing this.
No.
He's like, well, it's not like we're getting blown out. It's like, Lincoln Riley, you are 4-5 at USC now. That is not the thing.
That's
after
not what they want to hear.
Closing down practice availability to the media, by the way, this is the result after you think it's, you know, the media that's starting to deter the players. Are you kidding me?
All right. So that pretty much seals it up.
Well, Luke, I got to get at least 2-3 minutes on Narrative Street here.
Oh, geez.
Come on. Luke, I have had this thing circled.
Yeah,
4 months.
I know.
And here's what I will say. This is going to be one of my favorite games of the year because it's PJ Fleck against his mentor, Greg Schiano, going back to Tampa Bay. You've got Kirk Ciarrocca, two-time Minnesota offensive coordinator, leaves for Penn State once and then leaves for money to go to Rutgers on the second time. Is there a little bit of bad blood there between PJ and him? Mm-hmm. You've got Corey Heatherman going against Joe Harris-Simiak, who's the Rutgers defensive coordinator. Now, Harris-Simiak was here. Now he's at Rutgers. Heatherman was his right-hand man, both at Maine and at Rutgers. They get to go against each other a little bit. Kirk Ciarrocca knows Minnesota. Joe Harris-Simiak knows Minnesota. I mean, they know how each other are going to want to game plan this thing. And then the elephant in the room. Flip Dixon. No, I'm kidding. But even though that is part of it. Yeah, Flip Dixon is going to be a part of this game. But Ethan Kaliakmanis gets to go against his former team. And you get Ethan versus Brosmer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's freaking Rutgers versus Minnesota at 11 a.m. on NBC.
So
you got to let me have this. You got to let me parade down Narrative Street later this week.
Yeah, you know, I am interested to see all the narratives you're able to drum up for this. What I'm most interested in, though, Ryan, is where will you be getting a slice of pizza once you get to Piscataway?
Oh, yeah. I will take any and all New Jersey recommendations. I'll be getting out there, I think, Friday afternoon. So I haven't been to Piscataway in a few years. So you don't get to have a body like mine. I got a face for radio and a body for podcasting without enjoying a nice slice of pizza. So if you got any New Jersey recommendations, slide them into the DMs. But your Golden Gophers, Luke, 6-3. I'm probably not going to be spending my Christmas in Detroit for another. I'm tired of Christmas dinners at the MGM Grand or the Greektown Casino because of the only two things that are open. We'll see what Dan Owen says later this week. But, Luke, if you win the game coming up here, which I believe Minnesota is a 6-point favorite here early on, and I don't disagree with that. Like, we're going to be talking about not only is maybe at Music City as kind of a floor at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a Florida Bowl, baby. I mean, you're sitting like tied for fifth in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah.
You have 4 Big Ten wins. You've won 4 Big Ten games in a row. You're peaking in November. I would also tell you this before we sign off, Luke. I have a birdie that likes to talk to me within Dickeytown Athletes. And I got some clearance to share that, Luke, did you know Dickeytown Athletes has a match campaign going on?
They do have a match campaign going on. Now is the best time you are going to be able to double your money, whether you get a new membership or upgrade your membership, or you just make a one-time donation.
Well, I would tell you the number one question I get from listeners, from Gopher Illustrated members, and I've already shared this on the GI board, which – look, if you're not excited about Gopher football after 4 straight wins, let me tell you, the portal is right around the corner. Recruiting is coming to the finish line. Join Gopher Illustrated. Support what I do. I'm a local guy. again, everything counts, and I would appreciate it more than you know. So if you've been waiting for it, this is a great time to jump aboard. But how is the Dinky Town Athletes match campaign going? Well, I talked to a little birdie over there, and while they're not going to disclose any of the number in terms of monetarily, because I know everybody's nosy, everybody wants to know, what I can confirm is this. This is the most successful campaign that they have ever run, and there's still a week left. From what I've been told, the number of new members that have joined Dinky Town Athletes have blown away kind of what they've seen before, and it's not even close. So if you've been on the fence and you're like, well, who's actually joining this? You know, can we actually make an impact? Look, that birdie ain't wrong too often that I talk to over there. There is a significant impact being made. Now, they want to be able to finish strong to the finish line. So if you're looking for a push to get off the fence, this thing has been very successful, and we'll see if fans continue to join to make this even more successful, Luke.
Yeah, we want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you all that support Dinky Town Athletes, like Team Dinky Town Real Estate Group. Want to thank the Burns Insurance Agency and Home Field Apparel for all making this podcast possible. Again, thank you for listening, and go.